Okay, so Zaflon, why don't you tell us how you got your start in music?
I got my start in music. Well, I started playing guitar when I was 13. Me and a mate at school. I just like moved to a new school. I was just like kind of like the new kid in school, and I didn't have any friends. And there was this guy called Ollie, and he was just like, "Hey, yeah, kind of come watch me play guitar." And I was like, "Okay." And he got his electric guitar, and I was like, "Oh my god, that's so cool!" Like. He's playing this electric guitar, and I really wanted to learn how to play. So it's like I started learning how to play, and eventually, I actually ended up in a band with him, and we started doing gigs in London. And most venues in London, you've actually got to work at the time anyway. You had to got to be 18 to go in, because they don't give you, like, you know, like in America, how you can have the cross on the back of your hand and stuff like that. We would just booked ourselves in to do these gigs, and we'd turn up, and the promoter would see that we were like, you know, these 15-year-old kids, just like, you know, with our guitars and our drums and stuff like that, waiting to play, and they just let us play. Do you know what I mean? We just had to do it. We just did it. It was really good.
Nice.
It was some good times. So that's how I started playing, yeah.
So over there, you can be 18 to get in a club, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
because here you got to be like 21.
Yeah.
So,
that's true.
Yeah, because I remember when I was a kid, I was kind of like that too. I started in a band when I was 15, and then I was 21 for 6 years. You know what I'm saying? So how would you describe your sound? Because I heard Blink the other day, and that's why we asked for the interviews, because we thought it was awesome, man. I mean, it's got a fresh sound to it, you know. So how did that song come about, and how did Mina Fedora, how did that come, you know, to where she was gonna drop her vocals on it?
Well, okay, basically so I was doing quite a lot of drum and bass, and I was like playing with all the sort of like all the different breaks, and they're just like all these old kind of like breaks that you pick up of vinyl records and stuff. And it's like, there's actually a really good YouTube video that you can watch about like the Amen break, which is it was like a B-side for this like a tune from the 60s from a band that hardly did anything, but it was right in the middle of this B-side. There was this drum break where the drummer just like played drums for about 6 seconds without any other instruments, and it got put onto a compilation CD, and it got sampled by loads of producers, this compilation CD, and it ended up becoming like the foundation break for, like, you know, hip hop and drum and bass, like at a faster tempo and stuff like that. Anyway, so there's a bunch of these breaks like that like a lot of people have used, and I was just like kind of doing a lot of, I was just making a lot of drum and bass, but I was still kind of like, I was like playing with, I think the chords from Blink were actually taken off an older song that I just didn't know what to do with. And I didn't like anything about the song, but the chords. So I just like took those chords, I imported it, started making this drum and bass song. And I'd done a track with Mina Fedora before, which was kind of like more of a, kind of like a jump up, drum and bass dance track. And I was like, just speaking to her online, I was like, do you want to do something a little darker? And basically I met Mina Fedora like on SoundCloud. It was like a point when SoundCloud was like not quite as big, not quite as commercial, probably about like, I don't know, probably about 3 years ago. And it didn't sound like such a long time ago, but it was a little bit different, because if you followed people, they followed back, and like a lot of people like listened to each other's music, couldn't like repost stuff like you can now. And Mina Fedora was listening to my music, and she liked loads of it, and started writing comments. And she was like, "I sing. Do you want to do a track?" And I went over to her page and I listened to her vocals on her songs, and I was like, "Oh my god, this girl's amazing." But the funny thing is that she actually sounds quite British, but she's the American.
Yeah.
She's from Kentucky. The singing accent. Yeah, she's from Kentucky. Like, but her singing accent sounds like she's from, like she's from South London. Like she's grew up from like around where I did, which is kind of cool. And she sent me these vocals, and she just knows what she's doing. She records them really well. They're actually kind of like about, it's strange, I didn't even know what they were about. It's like, are they about death? Are they about love? I'm not even sure. But but it was just like a night. It was the whole, like that whole lyric is that whole lyric is her own idea. So you might have to ask her.
Well, it all fits. I'm kind of sad that she's in Kentucky and you're in London, because my next question was going to be, are you guys going to hook up permanently?
Oh, what do you know? What we'll probably do a couple more tracks together at some point. We've done some stuff before. But like it's different. It's like there's lots of things that I want to do, and there's lots of kind of people who I want to work with as well. And what's great about kind of going out on my own, whereas before I was just like producing bands, I was like not just bands, like bands and artists and things like that. I'd work on, essentially I'd be working on someone else's project, or I'd be engineering for someone else's project. So it's like I'd either engineer or be a tracking engineer or remixer or a producer, depending on what it was that I was working on. Mm-hmm. And the thing is about going out on my own is that I can just basically have kind of, it's like having guests into your house. It's like actually, before I was going out, staying in hostels and stuff, and it's like almost like now I've got my own, like my own flat, and I can have guests in and they can come and then they can go, and I can continue doing music and take the music down any route that I want to, and just sort of like feature people along the way. And to me, that's where I'm going now. That's what I want to do more of. So the Mina Fedora feature is, is really cool. But there'll be more features who have different personalities and different voices and, different instruments. Like there's a couple of people who I'm thinking of right now who are like actually, instrumentalists that have a very particular style that I kind of want to work into a song.
Nice. Now, do you find that when you do collaborations as a solo artist, that it changes the dynamics of the song or whatever in ways that you didn't expect? I mean, even though, you know, like in this case especially, you're doing all the instrumentation.
That's right, yeah. It does. I mean, it does change. It inevitably does change the end result, which is why I do it. But in the same way as the tools you use change your result, and the environment that you're in changes your result, and the friends that you have change the result, and the relationship that you're in change the result. It's like, all these things matter, and they all make a difference. But you can definitely be very dramatically inspired by someone who you work with, and that can affect not just the song you're working on, but it can also affect your future material as well. You know, I think that my time spent kind of sort of producing other people and engineering for other people and remixing and stuff like that has, every single recording session I've been in or remix I've done has changed the way I look at music or shown me something new that I didn't know before.
Now, have you ever thought that, like, okay, when you release a song, having said what you just said, you'll hear it like a year later and then decide, you know what, I think I can take it in an even different direction?
Oh, what, you mean work on a song from a year previous?
Yeah. Based on what you said before, you know, you leave a song alone and you come back a year or so later and then you think about it in a totally different way and then you just redo it.
That's definitely a good thing to do. And that's, I mean, I'd recommend that for anyone who's kind of like out there making their own music and they've just written a song and they think that it's just been for nothing and a waste of time, whatever. It's like, keep hold of that stuff and archive all your material and make sure that you've got the mixes and make sure you've got the vocals separate. You haven't just got the bounce down MP3, because you never know. You might just find that really useful for something that you can't even think of right now.
Exactly. Now, being a musician myself, I'm a guitar player, like you, I gotta ask, with everything that you use, what kind of gear are you using? Not just guitar-wise, but studio-wise.
Oh, studio-wise. Okay. My studio is based around a Mac computer. My mainframe sequencer is Logic. I just use a lot of plugins, but in terms of hardware, I've still got my old Boss BR-8 and my MK Micro Korg, which is like a really cool kind of like vocoder synthesizer, but it's like a, you know, it's not sort of like super expensive or anything. I've got a Hamer USA maple top sort of two cutaway guitar with like two humbuckers on it, like Seymour Duncan humbuckers, like what you have in the Les Pauls. And I've got AKG C414 microphones, matched pair. Rhodes K2, that's like an Australian brand, it's really good. Rhodes K5s, Audix drum mics. Even though I haven't actually recorded any live drums on my own stuff, that's all sequenced and sampled and stuff. But it's something that, like at a later point, as I'm sort of developing the project more and more, it's like, and it can go in more directions. It's, you know, I've engineered like live drum recordings like quite many times, so it's something that I may well work into some future music, which would be exciting if I had the budget to you know, use a larger studio.
Now, do you find recording live drums hard? Because I tried it once and it was a pain in the ass.
Recording live drums, right? That's a funny one. Right, okay. If you just walk into a studio cold, yeah, and you're just using a bunch of stuff, I can imagine why it would be quite a pain in the ass. But actually, I've done it on my own equipment sort of so many times that I've kind of ironed out all the faults. Like, I know exactly where to put each mic with certain kits. It's like I'm not having to like guess like one of 20 options. I'm like looking at more like one of three options every time. So it's like, you know, there's a particular, like I get K5, I put it under the snare drum so it picks up the rattle of the snare, and that gets the sizzle. And then on top I use the Audix i5, which is a bit like an SM57, Shure SM57, and that's to pick off the smack. And that usually sorts me out for a snare drum. Overheads, I always use the C414s, but I use those mics all the time, so I know exactly how they're meant to sound. And then it's just a matter of getting the phasing right by like there's a little trick that you do with a tape measure to basically make sure that the distance of the overhead mics are the same distance from the snare drum and the kick drums, so they don't like phase and flam. But basically, it's like sound engineering. Like, it's the same with like mixing, and it's the same with recording. It's just like an accumulation of loads of like little things that you sort of like learn over the years, and then you sort of put them together and then, yeah.
Now, what about guitar as a guitarist? Do you mic your amp, or do you go DI?
I like to go, recently I like to go DI. Recently I like to go DI because I like to be able to play with the raw signal, because I do a lot of, my stuff is very abstracted. My music is very kind of, I'm not trying to sound like a live band playing a gig, like with my stuff. I'm trying to sound like the guitar. I'm trying to send it to like outer space, you know? So it's like the getting the raw signal from the guitar and then being able to deal with it in the computer from that point on is a lot better for me. But if I was recording a band and they wanted to sound like the Rolling Stones, or they wanted to sound like the Strokes or something, I wouldn't even dream of using a DI. You know what I mean? I'd definitely go mic amp.
Yeah, because DI has certain advantages. Like if you want to, like what you were talking about, if you want to reamp or something later on,
yeah,
and stuff. But yeah, I mean, sometimes the ambience. I always felt sometimes, you know, the ambience with a live mic is better. Plus, because I always used to like to put my amp like in the bathroom. and then, you know, when you get the reverb from the tiles and everything. A little practice amp, and now it sounds like a big Marshall 412 and stuff, you know? So, I mean, like,
that's the thing is, as long as, that's a whole other way of looking at it. I suppose, like, if you kind of, you know, if you have the space and stuff, and, like, one of the other things is, to get, like, an amp sounding really juiced, you need quite a lot of volume. And when you're kind of you're in a small flat in London, you can't always have that volume and stuff, you know. It's like, and also it's like you're getting other sounds coming onto your guitar. Like, you'll have, like, recording acoustic guitar is always difficult. You've got to try and sort of, like, find a decent studio to record acoustic guitar, because everything gets on it, because you use really sensitive mics, so, like, lots of, like, high end response, and it's like the room cannot be quiet enough, you know what I mean? Like, for a good acoustic guitar recording, you need a really good room, and even more so, I find, to be honest, even more so, and, like, the vocals, really.
Yeah, exactly. And it's becoming a lost art too, what you're talking about, because I kind of feel that, like, the cheaper the equipment gets, and if you notice, like, a lot of the stuff, like Pro Tools, Logic and stuff, are coming down in price. You know, because, you know, but the bad part is you get people that will just unbox it and go, you know, and not read up or study on it.
Well, you see, this is the thing, because the thing is, in some ways, I'm really up for, like, the whole, like, unbox it and go thing, because that's, like, a really good attitude for getting you into it. But the problem is, because the box it and go result is actually reasonably good now, it stops you learning how to really do it. Whereas, like, you know, even though when I started out, like, it was kind of considered, I was considered very new gen in terms of sort of, like, you know, mixing in the computer and stuff like that. And it's like, I didn't even have a proper studio and the rest of it. But even then, like, you couldn't just get a good result without knowing what you were doing. It's like you at least had to learn how to sort of, like, you know, sort of set an EQ and a compressor and what you're doing with your reverb, just to get it sounding good to start with. Whereas, like, now, say for instance on Logic, on the new version, it comes with a whole bunch of presets. You plug your mic in, you hit your first preset saying, like, sweet vocal, and it sounds like a sweet vocal. Now, the thing is, it sounds like a sweet vocal, but like, unless you know how to make it sound like a sweet vocal, it's not gonna fit that well. So it's like, people end up with these kind of very people end up with sort of, like, kind of getting a result, but they're not being able to get a better result because they haven't done the bit before. So it's like, you can't, you know, it's a bit like the difference between someone who's, like, bought an old banger car and, you know, they fixed it up themselves and they've done it up themselves and everything like that. And then later on, when it breaks down, when they want to tune it up even better and make it run nicer, like, they can do it because they already had to fix it up a little bit at the early stages. Whereas someone who's just bought a brand new, you know, sort of, like, you know, like a brand new shiny imported car, and they've never even looked at the manual ones, it's like, they can only do with it what they can do with it now. It's like, it's not going to change tomorrow. They're not going to be able to tune it up or sweeten it up or make it better because it works great now, and that's fine, but it'll only, there's a bit of a ceiling there. So it's like, you know, I'd recommend that, like, for anyone who's sort of, like, for anyone who's kind of, like, making their music to just, even if engineering's not your thing or your main objective or your prime thing, it's like, there's actually a lot you can learn about how music works from engineering your own stuff. And it'll make you kind of think about instrumentation differently in a way that will kind of help you and bring you out of, you've got a song and there's something about it that's just not quite catchy, and it's like, you're just thinking about it emotively and not technically at all. Whereas if you sort of like have some kind of understanding of like how sort of sound locks together and what sort of various processes like do to bits of sound, you can actually go, oh, you know what it's lacking? It's lacking, you know, it's lacking like, you know, sort of some low mid saturation or something, you know what I mean? And then you think, okay, what could give that low mid saturation? Oh, actually, do you know what I mean? Like a nice fat organ or something. Do you know what I mean? And then because of that, yeah. So you thought, okay, cool. And you put an organ in there, and that's a creative decision that's come out of a technical experience.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you're talking about is dead on accurate too, because another thing you mentioned earlier that I think really, really, really needs highlighting is earlier when I had made the comment about how it might stifle creativity, you know, because it's so, you know, because you're taking the stuff right out of the box and it's already set up, you know. But you know, you made a really good point in saying about how it could actually make you more creative. And I think one of the ways that you're talking about is with like all the plugins and everything like that, because what stuff like that does, like when I got Pro Tools, I got a bunch of plugins, and what the plugins actually got me doing was playing. You know, I was recording stuff that nobody was ever going to hear. You know, I just wanted to see how the stuff worked with my, you know, with my computer and everything. And
yeah.
And then you start playing around, and that's when the most creative stuff comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And, so it's like say, so when I'm making my own stuff, what I'll do is I'll take a sample and I'll start playing with it. And I will start seeing kind of what it's made of and what it can do and what it says to me. And then I, you know, turn the lights down and see what, you know, see what invokes visually as well. And then, I'll then maybe sort of like kind of get out a keyboard and, work with a synthesizer, and I'll start off with a patch that will be very kind of like out of the box and kind of like ordinary sounding. And then I'll just tweak it and play with it and add things to it and maybe run it through a few effects and then maybe sample it and put it back into a sampler and then play it again. And, you know, turn it inside out. You know what I mean? Like there are so many things you can do with sound, and like, especially now, with the spectral synthesis, that's the thing that I'm really into right now. And it's like, it's kind of a very similar technology that you use to kind of sonar. So you get like, you've got like a, I don't know if I'm explaining it right actually. So you've got like a sound, and, what the spectral synthesizer or sampler is doing is essentially like recreating the sound, but synthetically, but as you actually hear it. But what that means is that you can manipulate it in ways that you couldn't just manipulate the sound recording. So you can like, you can pick out something that's kind of in the background and like bring it right to the front, and then kind of change the pitch of it, and then have that being played at the same time with like several points in the keyboard. But like in a lower formant, you know, but be able to manipulate that like you're manipulating a picture, because the controls are getting more deep and more visual and more accessible, which means that as a, you know, as a creative person, you've got like even more kind of like tactility and room to maneuver. I don't know if that's answered that question.
No, that makes perfect sense too. I mean, because basically what you're saying is the possibilities are limitless, and the deeper you can go into things like that, I mean, the more you can discover. Because you you can take blank and then go back and then rethink it with nothing, with, you know, adding nothing to it, and still make it a completely different song.
Yeah, I mean, you could take Blink. You could take Blink, and you could sort of don't know, you could morph the vocal, you could change the melody of the vocal, take out all the beats, replace them with the sound of like a breaking ice glacier or something. That would actually sound awesome. Like a giant breaking ice glacier. It's like, cause, you know, they squeak and crumble and growl at the same time. Glaciers are amazing because they're so big, but they're made out of such sharp material. So breaking ice, oh, that's a good idea actually. No, but I'm not going to remix Blink anytime soon. I've got other things I'm doing.
Well, speaking of that, let's talk about the other tracks that are going to be coming up on the EP. When's the EP coming out, and what are some of the other tracks on there?
Well, okay, the EP looks like it's going to be coming out like early December, and the tracks aren't even named because I've changed my mind about what I'm going to call them several times already. It's going to be, this one's going to be a lot more instrumental, a lot slower and a lot deeper. Blink was very harsh in the top end, and I like that, but that's the way that song sounds. The EP is going to be a far sort of like lower, smoother, slower kind of experience, because it's going to be a winter release as well, and it's just the way that I am. It's like, if I've just worked on something that's really fast, I want to do something slow afterwards. You know what I mean? Exactly. Because I've just spent all this time like listening to all these like kind of like fast drums and all these like really kind of harsh noises going, and I just want something that's like low and melty and wavy, and that's what I'm going to do for this next EP. So I think I've got see what the working titles of the tracks are right now. So I'm just going to look it up on my own iTunes right now. I've got a track called Dear Friend of Mine. That's actually about a friend of mine that he actually sort of died earlier this year, and funnily enough, it's the guy, you know, I was telling you when I first started playing guitar, and the guy who I saw in school who was like, yeah, come watch me play guitar. That's him. So yeah, I thought he deserved a tribute. Yeah, he died. Really, obviously, you know, very young. So that one's about him. Even though it's instrumental, but it's just kind of that's why it's called Dear Friend of Mine. And then I've got one called Empathy. That's a real name. I'm definitely sticking with that. And then some working titles. I've got Night Shift Emergency, Nightmare Division, and Spring, and Despite All Odds. So make of that what you will.
Nice. And that's all going to come out in early December, right?
That's coming out early December.
Now, yeah. Is Blink going to be included in the EP?
No. Blink's a standalone single. It's the first. It's the first single. It's funny, actually. I was like, Chris from Music Born, who you've been in contact with, I basically played him a bunch of my music, and he heard Blink, and he was like, oh, that, just put that one out first. And I was like, really? I don't know. Cause it was like, you know, cause I've had you have a bunch of tunes and stuff that you're kind of considering. And he's like, yeah, that one. And I was like, okay. And then I started mixing down. I was like, actually, yeah, no, I know it. Yeah. Okay, cool. Wicked. Take it there. Go there with it. I was like, yeah.
And that's kind of the cool thing about music, because, you know, when I hear stories like that, I think, okay, Zaflon thinks one thing of the music that he made, he shows it to somebody else, and then they get a totally different impression.
Yeah, because I didn't see that one as a single track. I saw that one as a track that is like on an album, maybe, you know what I mean? Like a dark, quite an intense listen, sort of maybe for someone who's like heard some of my stuff that's easier to listen to, and then they're kind of like worked into that and they can kind of like handle it. But because it's so skittish,
Well, let me read you a quote from a review I wrote last week or earlier this week on it, and let me know what you think, if you think it fits based on what you think of the song. And what I wrote was, "This is a sultry mix of beauty and the beat, guaranteed to awaken the masses who chose the blue pill."
Damn right.
So
yeah, okay, man. That's the thing. With all kind of culture, it's like some culture is very challenging, and it's sort of like, by nature of being challenging, it will kind of like put a lot of people off. But the people who kind of like sort of get through that will sort of like enjoy it more, because they get insight to that thing that other people don't get insight to. It's like, I don't know. It's sort of, almost, okay. Imagine like food. Yeah. Right. So you've got some kind of dish and it's kind of got like these like strange spices in it and these kind of like funny pickled things in it and everything like that. And it's like, if a lot of people were to eat that, they go, you know, what on earth is that? What the heck is that? But it's actually sort of like it's actually kind of a more interesting experience overall, because that's one of many things that you could have tried. Whereas like, I kind of see pop music, like chart pop music, kind of like it's like a Big Mac. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You can get it anywhere.
You can get it anywhere. You know exactly what it's going to taste like. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, you can eat it, but
yes. Yeah. Like I could fly over there right now and give you a Big Mac from Chicago and then say, here you go, and you would think it was, other than it being cold, that it was from London. You know, it's the same all over.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I see kind of like music that doesn't challenge you, music that just kind of like will tell you the same story that you've been told a million times, that is kind of recorded in the same way and sounds the same way and is mixed the same way and it's kind of like instrumentally the same as other things. That's not going to interest anyone who's got like a real hunger for new music. It's only going to sound a lot like a lot of other things, and different artists and different bands and stuff like that do that in different ways. It's like, sometimes you have, you know, I mean, you can have bands that, like, for instance, some songwriters and stuff, like a very simple and basic and maybe even kind of copycat musically, but lyrically they're doing something so so cool and new and advanced with their lyrics that it makes their music really interesting to listen to. Or it's like, you'll have these kind of like electronic producers and stuff like that who will maybe not do anything with their music that is going to kind of, is going to kind of like inspire you on a sort of like a meaning level, but they have found a way of making the sound of the instrument new and kind of otherworldly and will sort of take you to this new place. And the same goes for sort of like people with their arrangements and people with their, I don't know, people with their sort of like, you know, their riffs or their solos or their vocal styles, accents, you know, it's just, you know, it's that thing that you have to, yeah.
That's exactly what I call it too. I mean, it's that thing that just makes everything click.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, because you have to know when to play, you have to know when not to play, you have to know what to play, but then you also have to know why to play.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. And like one of the things to say, for instance, like with Blink, that and I mean, if you listen to sort of like some of my other stuff on my SoundCloud, if you go to my SoundCloud, you can listen. There's a few things that I just like uploaded there that I kept there. I've privated most of my tracks because I just wanted to just sort of like, I don't want people to just like hear everything I've been doing. But I left quite a few things up there, and it's like you know, you can hear the stuff that's sort of like more akin to kind of like a lot of the sort of like British dance music that I kind of grew up around, like, you know, Chemical Brothers and Fatboy Slim and stuff like that. And they were always like, and you know, and sort of like and Basement Jacks and people like that. And then they were always sort of like recycling a lot of sounds that they found from records and from you know, and from sample libraries and recordings and the rest of it. But then you had this whole sort of like in the sort of in the noughties and teenies, you got this whole sort of like new generation of producers that are actually kind of trying to make music that maybe 10 years before wouldn't have been considered like listenable music, you know? They're kind of like they're just like taking the sound of some traffic and sort of stretching it over the space of 3 minutes, and then having someone kind of like playing like cups with like a little bit of water at the bottom, you know, kind of amplified in a piano cabinet or something, you know what I mean? And gone to these real sort of like real lengths to make their process unique. I'm not even worrying necessarily about the end result, and not even worrying about the constraints of what a song is. And a lot of them have been, very inspiring. And, you know, and I was fortunate enough to, engineer some sessions like for 10 days in Cornwall with Jamie Woon and Burial. I kind of got this like sort of like this, you know, this like amazing experience of sort of being, you know, it's like spending 10 days with this guy who's kind of like a, you know, like considered sort of one of the most like influential kind of electronic producers. And then Jamie, who I've actually like, Jamie Woon, who I've known since uni, and who actually kind of got me down there with him to do the recording and stuff, because I kind of had all the mics and everything, who's like just this amazing craftsman, songwriter and singer, like absolutely incredible singer, incredible songwriter and incredible guitarist as well. So it's like I had this sort of, you know, I was just sort of spending this time with these two guys, and like one of them was just the kind of exploring, engineering, kind of like sort of soundscape genius, and the other one was like this sort of guitar playing troubadour singer genius. And it was
a true mentor situation.
Yeah, that was really something. But and it's kind of, and I always sort of like rewind to those days, and like I remember little things, and there's like it's more the it's more the kind of like the attitude and the philosophy and the ethic behind making music that I picked up from that in the more strongly than anything else, I think.
Nice. I love hearing people bring up situations like that, because then it shows that the talent passes through and it passes on.
Yeah, that's what you got to stay absorbent.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Now, what does Zaflon have coming up? We talked about the EP earlier. Are you playing out everywhere or anywhere with this music yet? Or are you going to come out with it later? Or?
Well, I DJ, but I'm actually in the lab at the moment, so I'm just like working on new music. So it's like it's a very different thing, like going out there and DJing and stuff. It's like if I went out there and DJed now, I don't even know what I'd play, because I haven't collected like the latest stuff. So what I'm doing is I'm doing this next EP, and I'm also working on like a much larger a body of music that I'm kind of that I'm saving for an album, but I haven't as yet sort of like decided who I'm going to put it out with. So it could be, and I don't want to say anything, but there's a few people who I'm looking at the moment. But when it comes to an album, I don't want to just I don't want to drop it cold. I want to make sure that it's well. I want to make sure that it's kind of, you know, that it's ready to be received.
Yeah, you want to make sure the buzz is out there.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want sort of the S album to come out and then sort of like later to go, oh, I didn't know you made an album. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's because that does happen so often. It's like you get people who sort of like made these, you know, made brilliant records. You know what I mean? And they just not timed it right. And they suddenly the record's out there and no one knows about it. And then by the time people find out, like, there's like 20 other records that have come out that's kind of sound the same anyway, and like no one really wants to know.
Yeah, that's the way my band was. I remember, like, you know, people like, hey man, when did you guys come out with this? 3 years ago. you know, well, it sounds great. You know, but well, where can we find Zephlon online?
Best place is SoundCloud. Come find me on SoundCloud, because that's my hub. But you can also find Zephlon Music on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. I'm just @Zephlon.